Welcome, everybody, to this week's installment of Supernatural Judaism. We will be discussing constellations. So let's get started. Okay, so constellations, also known by their Hebrew name of Bazalot, so that's going to be our general topic. So again, we'll go through the sources chronologically, more or less. If anybody has any particular questions they want to know that I don't cover, please save them for the end. We'll have plenty of time to answer all of your constellation and Mazalot related questions, hopefully. Okay, so the first things, let's just line up the three basic questions that we're going to be talking about. So we're going to be talking about constellations. So what do we mean by constellations? So basically my background, there are stars. So we're simply talking about the fact that, you can, make interesting shapes if you on a nice clear night. Is that what we're talking about, or is it something else? So first we're going to discuss what exactly are they. Another question is, once we figure out what they are, what effect do they have on the world? Next, we're going to be discussing, even if they have an effect, are you allowed to consult these constellations? Is that allowed or forbidden? Okay, so that's the basic order of events. Again, we're going to see how it goes. And then there's also the question of when are we referring to it. So we're going to talk about three different time periods about views and constellations. One, we'll see the general view in Tanakh. Then we'll see the view in the times of the Gemara. And then we're going to see some more of the sort of the Rishonim leading to the modern day halacha l'masa about what do we do about constellations. So far, so good. So my first question is, when you think about constellations, what do you normally think of?
Stars in the sky.
Stars in the sky. Very good. What else?
Bodies in the sky that were interpreted to have some kind of meaning by the random groupings of the stars.
Based on the groupings, you can learn things about meaning of affecting what?
Like the zodiac.
Well,
the zodiac, very good, right? That's what you think of the constellations, like the zodiac. Okay, so which zodiac? You're talking Jewish, Chinese, which one, right? The zodiac, what are they, right? What's the zodiac? Okay.
Doesn't make sense to divide everybody into 12.
Right, everybody has their own specific zodiac constellation. Right, everybody, when you're born, you're one of these. You're one of these. Very good. What else? You think of constellations? One thing I think about sometimes is the scene from The Lion King, where you see Mufasa coming back from the dead in the stars. But okay, so everybody has in their minds what they envision when they think of constellations. So let's dive in. So that one of the earliest Jewish depictions we have is seen on the right is from a mosaic from the floor of a shul in Beit Alpha. People may have had a chance to visit the ancient shul. It is quite interesting. So you may notice that on the floor of that shul they had a large mosaic of the what looks to be the Jewish zodiac. And in case you're wondering why you might think that, so on the left I have a picture of the modern horoscope wheel depicting the zodiac, and if you look at the way it lines up, you'll notice that it's basically an exact one-for-one correlation. Right? You see how basically the depictions are also almost all the same, right? So we've got, let's start from the top of the one on the Jewish one, right? So we've got Cancer, right? Which is the crab. We've got Gemini, which is the twins, right? So again, the order is right, roughly following around, right? We've got the ox, which is the Taurus. We've got the sheep, which is Aries. We've got the fish, right? Which is then we've got Janus or Aquarius, right? Then we've got Capricorn's cut off. But again, we go through them all, and you basically see they pretty much line up one for one. Seemingly, it's the same, modern horoscope. And then right, So the question is, so it's seemingly like this is, if it's in the center of your shul, odds are you probably hold of it. So I'd also like to point out, again, sorry for not having a picture of it, but also if you were to walk into Yeshiva University, and you're heading towards the Lamport Auditorium, which is where they often, where they have a lot of large events there. So when you first thing you do when you walk in is you walk over a picture of a zodiac, right? So what's up? Do we give any value to this or not? Like what?
Anyone?
How do we view the mazalot, the zodiac, the constellations? Like what place do they actually have in the end in our Judaism nowadays? Clearly, they used to have a relatively large place, but what? How much place should we give them? And is that right? So first, before we get into exactly that, let's distinguish in two different things that are going to be very important. Okay, there's astronomy and astrology. Who thinks they know the difference? Anybody want to try shouting it out? What's the difference between astronomy versus astrology?
Astronomy is the actual science of studying the stars, their positions, their orbits, their place in the universe. Astrology is looking at them and finding signs that might apply to our daily life.
Correct. Very good, right? Mark got it precisely. Right, that's the difference between astronomy and astrology. And it'll be very important to differentiate between the two because nobody has anything against astronomy. Right, everybody says that almost everybody will say that there's value to be said even nowadays in astronomy, knowing where how the movements of the sun, moon, and the stars, as well as anything else that moves outside of the earth. But astrology is where people start getting very uncomfortable and start thinking that it's magic and something else. So let's see what do we see. So let's see what the sources will hopefully tell us about each of these respective pursuits. So we're going to focus more on the astrology and the astronomy. I'll simply quote outside because it's just because. Let's start with the astrology, okay? Because that's the more people have more questions about it. I would hope, as well as normally the less traveled route. Okay, so here we go. So here are two different verses which may seem familiar. So one from Vayikra, one in Devarim. So I'll start from the first verse of Vayikra. I'll read the Hebrew and the English because they're both it's short. So nechashu v'lo te'onenu. You shall not practice divination or soothsay. So which would that seem to disallow? Astronomy or astrology?
Astrology.
Astrology, right? Good. Now let's look at the next one. Let's see if that does have a similar result. Okay, so when thou come to the land which the Lord thy God giveth, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter pass through the fire, one that uses divination or soothsayer or enchanter or sorcerer or charmer, or one that consulteth a ghost or a spirit or a necromancer. Whoever does these things is an abomination unto the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord thy God is driving them out from before thee. So, yeah, so what are we talking about there that's seemingly forbidden? Astrology or astronomy?
Same.
Astrology, right? Astronomy, no problem. As far as, discussion of mentions of astronomy in the, the Torah, so there's a mitzvah of determining the months and the years. But that would appear to be aside for why astronomy is perfectly fine. In fact, mitzvah to do so. But is that really, does this really hold throughout the rest of the Tanakh also? Is this just, or like, is there times when you could? So let's move a little farther forward. So to note of the astrology, it's also important to note of the astrologers, right? So who are astrologers in Tanakh? So there's roughly three, there's basically three groups. So one is that we've seen a lot of them recently, that of the astrologers of Egypt, right? The Khartoumim, right? So again, they have many different functions and you can debate exactly what they did. The names that they have could be Khartoumim, they could be Itzakionin, there's a lot of different, you know, again, in the text, the term we see is Chachamim. Then we have by what happens, the Midrash of Bilam, Harasha, and Balak, who each were who tried to curse the Bnei Israel using astrology. And last, we have Nebuchadnezzar's advisors in the second chapter of Daniel, who are the in addition to there being Chartumim, quoted similar we have in Paro's court, those also people called the Kasdim, the Chaldeans, which are interpreted to mean the magicians as well. Okay, one second. Okay. So next we have the. So next we have some that's what it seems to be, right? Jews don't do constellations, it's forbidden, and non-Jews try it, and it is ends in futility. As we know, the end result of the all of the advisors of Paru is that they lose, that Bilam and Balak, they lose, and that, you know, the advisors in Nebuchadnezzar's court, so Daniel outwits all of them, so clearly the one who wins is, yet again, the Jews, and the astrologers are wrong. So then we also have several verses in Tanakh where we mention the fact that God is the one who creates certain constellations. So again, so here we here are two different psukim from the Book of Iyov, where there's mention of God being the one who made the Pleiades and the Orion. And then talking about, I think I got cut out there for a second. So see the verses here. So we see the question of the fact that God is the one who made these constellations. So, right? So, and you'll notice the second one, you'll see, here, so the first verse, the first one in the beginning of Iyov, is clearly referring to the fact that God is the one who made everything, so he's the one who has control. And the last one is, during the dialogue between the other, this is God rebuking everybody else for doing the wrong thing. So he says, basically saying how, you know, the average human being thinking that they have control. And here we see something else that might be a little bit different. So let's read this one more in depth here. Okay, somebody like to read? Can I call on Orion Pilates maybe? Would he, or Mark, go for it.
Who made the Pleiades and Orion, who turns the deep darkness into dawn and darkens day into night, who summons the waters of the earth and pours them out upon the earth, his name is the Lord. Canst thou bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion? Canst thou lead forth the Mazarot in their season? Or canst thou guide the bear with her sons? Knowest thou the ordinances of the heavens? Canst thou diminish the dominion thereof in the earth?
Okay, so what is the scene from these verses? Is there such a thing as constellations? And do they have power?
They exist.
They exist. And do they have power?
I don't think so.
So here it seems like they might be you could read it as being the fact that God is the one who controls these powers. Right? So that's one way of reading it. You could also read it as saying that it's all moot. But again, here's getting a little more fuzzy. Which one is it? So even though here it's a little bit ambiguous, there's other places where it's much clearer the way we view these is as being useless. So here we have the here we have a pasuk from Yishayahu, where we are hearing about some people were being led astray. right? The Jews were busy doing avodah zarah, idol worship, and one of the things that they were doing was, instead of just relying on God, they turned to these other powers as well. So this is what right. So would somebody like to read about the being led astray by these powers?
Thou art weary in the multitude of the councils. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, and the monthly prognosticators stand up and save thee from the things that shall come upon thee. Behold, they shall be as stubble, and the fire shall burn them. They shall not deliver themselves from the power of the flames. It shall not be cold to warm at, nor a fire to sit before.
Okay, so in Yeshayahu's words, so people might turn to astrology, stargazers, who are able to seemingly protect people, predict the future, and save you from all harm. What actually happens? Does it work? Does astrology work?
It might work. It doesn't say it doesn't work, but it says you get burnt if you involve yourself with it.
Right, meaning you will get burned by using it. Meaning, but it also sounds like it's when it says it's a fire that not only will you they're a fire that doesn't have any substance or warmth or anything else, which means that it's really useless. As in, like, they might be able to tell you certain things, but it's essentially useless. So that's what it sounds like from this verse. So as far as the question of, there's other verses as well, which seem to indicate that, you know, that it's lumped together with the avodah zarah, which is that happens in the Book of Kings, right, where one of the things that was rooted out, people were worshiping avodah zarah. So it seems from here, right, definitely think, we've seen so far in the Tanakh, should you be consulting the stargazers and astrologers? Seemingly a very hard no. So let's see whether or not that holds through when we get to the times of the Gemara as well. So here's one source. So we have the Gemara Sakhim, where Rabbi Rachana had said that in the name of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Marta, that from what it is derived, the one may not consult astrologers. As it is stated, you shall be wholehearted with the Lord your God. The Torah demands absolute faith in God and acceptance of justice without attempting to predict the future. So basically, if you were to predict the future, to try and use astrologers, there's something wrong with your serving of God. Because it means you don't fully believe him if you're trying to figure out the future through other means. So, as it looks right now, end of story. But don't you worry. There's more. Yes?
So, what's the difference between, maybe you went a little bit late, what's the difference between astrologers, astronomers, and let's say when Shaul went to the Mahashefa?
The Baal Zidoni, yes, Baal Tov. So, right, so it's in here. So consultation with these demonic forces, soothsayers, necromancers, etc., is explicitly forbidden by the Torah. So if astrology is one of these, if that's what we mean by soothsayers and stargazers, if that's who they are, then that means astrologers are absolutely forbidden than something else. But the question is that really who astrologers are? Are they properly invited to them? So from here, it appeared from this Gemara, it seems very much so. So basically, this says you can't consult the Chaldeim, which is the term, like the Chaldeans. This is one of the advisors that Nebuchadnezzar had in his court. And it's interpreted as astrologers. That's what the word means. So according to that, I mean, it would seem that it would be a problem.
I don't see a connection.
What?
Yeah, I don't see a connection between absolute faith in God and acceptance of his justice on the one hand, and attempting to predict the future.
So,
I mean, a faith that God is going to make it happen, whatever he wants to happen.
Right. So it's, this is under the...
But what's the problem with knowing what's going to happen if it's going to happen anyway?
Right. So good question. So we're going to get to it more in depth. Right. The question is, what is so bad about knowing? Right. So the part of it is that we have prophecies. What's the difference between prophecy and astronomy and astrology? Right. What's the difference? So one thing is that, for instance, even prophecy isn't viewed as being definitive. In, like, prophecy has limited usage. Right, as in it says do this or else that will happen, but you always have the ability to change it. Whereas the view for astrology is, as we'll get to, we'll see in just a second, like how astrology works, right? So prophecy is, God says if you don't shape up, bad things are going to happen, you'll be destroyed, you're going to die, insert, you know, whole nice long list of bad things that can happen to you, or good things that will happen to you if you follow correctly. So that's one side of things, right? That's how prophecy works, right? It's conditional. But the view of astrology is that it's something that's absolute. So here I'm going to give it. So we're not going to go through the whole list of how astrology works. But in the next source, we're going to have a little bit about how it's an inescapable fate. So this is the Gemara Shabbat Daf Kuf Nun Vav. So Shabbat, yeah, Folio 156a. So the question is, so here. Preceding this, there was a full page discussing on the panel with Dave the week you're born, depending on the month you're born, there are certain determined characteristics that you will have. So now I'd like to focus on this particular on one particular one, which has a little bit more of an in depth fleshing out of what will happen to you if you happen to be born under a certain star. Okay, So anybody know a second? Let's scroll back a bit for just to check where can't remember which month Mars is. Mars is Jupiter. He is where'd he go? Not Aquarius.
Aries.
Which one is he? March. Anybody here born in the month of March? Nobody?
Nobody's willing to own up.
Nobody's born in the month of March. Okay. I thought I was gonna pick, we have to read. All right. Okay. Because that okay. So now that I'm gonna feel bad when we talk about I went too far. Here we go. Okay. So if somebody's born under Mars, which you may remember as being the, or also known as Aries, again, Mars is the translation into Latin, and right, according to the Romans, according to the Greeks, it would have been Aries. So, or as we see here, the red in the Aramaic it says Ba'adim, the red one, the red star. So who would like to talk about the effect of the god of war on people, the bloody star?
Mark comes from Mars.
Okay. So you like to give a shot?
From Shabbat 156a, one who is born under the influence of Mars will be one who spills blood. Rav Ashi said he will be either a bloodletter or a thief or a slaughterer of animals or a circumciser. Rava said, I was born under the influence of Mars and I do not perform any of those activities. Abaye said, my master also punishes and kills as a judge.
Okay. So what does it sound like from here? Can you escape the fate of being murderous? Yes or no? What do we think?
No.
Yes.
So, okay. So explain. What do you mean by yes or no? What do you mean by no?
You said, can you escape? Was that the question?
Yes.
Yes, because Rabba said he was born under Mars, but he wasn't influenced by it. So you can escape. And he wasn't any of those occupations.
Right, that's Rabba's opinion. What does Abaya question, say?
Was Abaya the disciple of Rabba? Was Rabba
right,
a judge?
He was, right? So his response was, no, you're wrong. You didn't escape fate. You just twisted it a little bit, right? So then, like we said before, Ravaji said, if you were born in this month, could either be a bloodletter, a thief, slaughter of animals, or a circumciser, right? If you want now, you could also throw in, you know, a doctor, bloodletter and doctor are the same thing. Just, you know, question of how advanced your science is. Right? So they were like, yeah, I don't have that job. So therefore, that's not true. And then by like, you're a judge. People get killed on what you say. So yeah, you do kill people. You know, not necessarily in as bloody a fashion, but you're still involved. So you can't say that. So this would, from this section, it would appear, at least again, Rabba clearly thinks that no, there's no such thing. Meanwhile, Abai and Ravashi definitely are on the camp of, yeah, it's not fully deterministic, as in like you have, it's like a predisposition. It's not that you're guaranteed to be, you know, if you were born in the month of Mars, you are going to be you're going to be a slaughterer. It's like, no, there'll be blood involved in your life somehow. And it's up to you to decide which way you want it to be. So this would imply that there is some weight to astrology, and it works. So if astrology works, then wait a minute. Then like, how do we get, what about, we have mentioned earlier, like, so what's going on here? Like, how are those going to work? So the answer is that, well, the Gemara continues. So not to worry. Okay. So now, here we go. So next we have.
Want to go on?
Sure.
Israel doesn't have mazal. It was stated that Rabbi Chanina said, a constellation makes one wise and a constellation makes one wealthy. And there is a constellation for the Jewish people that influences them. Rabbi Yochanan said, there is no constellation for the Jewish people that influences them. The Jewish people are not subject to the influence of astrology. And Rabbi Yochanan follows his own reasoning, as Rabbi Yochanan said, from where is it derived that there is no constellation for the Jewish people? As it is stated, thus said the Lord, learn not the way of the nations, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the nations are dismayed at them. The nations will be dismayed by them, but not the Jewish people.
Okay, so what does this imply? Is there such a thing as constellations? And do they work?
For the other guys.
Correct, right? So should you make fun of your neighbor who's not Jewish, who loves their horoscope and follows it religiously? No.
Yes, because they're not getting it from people who are learned and know how to interpret.
Right, you're right. You should say they pick the bad astrologers, maybe, right? You should tell them where the better astrologers can be found, right? But as in, would astrology have a much greater effect on non-Jews? Seemingly, of course. According to this logic, right? According to Rabbi Yochanan, the Jews are exempt.
I thought it came from a midrash that says that Abraham was taken by God above the stars, and this was in the middle of the day that he was done that. So, but above the stars is interpreted maybe homiletically to mean that we are above the mazalot.
Correct.
They do not influence us.
Yes, that is another, Mara's going to continue to get to that point. I didn't quote the whole thing, but correct. Yes, okay. So again, the point being is that there's something unique about this. This is saying that there's something, right? So first we have Rabbi Chanina, who's clearly stating there are constellations that can make you rich, and therefore that's why Jews are rich. But on the other hand, we are going to say, no, like constellations don't work for Jews. They might work in general, but definitely not for Jews.
Maybe, hang on a sec, maybe Rabbi Chanina is saying a constellation might make one Jew wise and may make one Jew wealthy, but the Jewish people as a whole are not influenced.
So it seems that there is, though. So the last line there, right? There's a constellation for the Jewish people that influences them. It implies that there is such a thing as a constellation that does affect all of the Jews, right? So so it works both. It is very expensive. It works on the individual level as well as on the national level. So according to this, we'd be kind of stuck, right? So there's a debate within the Gemara of does it work or doesn't it work? And the question is, so how are we going to decide at the end of the day? Does it work or doesn't it work? So let's see. So the Gemara is going to continue afterwards and mention certain ways to escape Mazel. About mentioning about how you have to say, if you say Shema, and if you pray, you'll escape it. If you get stuck, you'll escape it. There's also a whole bunch of other stories. People did mitzvot, and therefore were able to escape their Mazel based on whatever merits they had. Again, there's a whole list. I didn't bring you the whole Gemara for just the time. But again, that's the Gemara continues on that. The whole list of other mitzvot as well, they can also overcome your faith. So in the Gemara, it seems like it has weight. Maybe not for Jews. And even if it does have weight, don't worry about it. Do mitzvot. You'll be able to survive. It'll be okay. So nobody's really super worried, but they are cautious of it. So then we get to the Rambam. So the Rambam, who's featured very prominently so far in what we've been learning. So he has a lot to say on astrology. So this is a letter he sent to rabbis in France, in Marseille. So where he discusses with problems with astrology. Know, my masters, that every one of those things concerning judicial astrology, that its adherents maintain, namely that something will happen one way and not another, and that the constellation under which one is born will draw him on so that he will be of such and such a kind, or something will happen to him one way, not the other. All of those assertions are far from being scientific. They are stupidity. There are lucid, faultless proofs refuting all the roots of those assertions. Never did one of those genuinely wise men of the nations busy himself with this matter or write on it. No nation wrote such compositions or committed the error of calling it a science other than the Chaldeans, Canaanites, and Egyptians. For that was their religion in those days. But the wise men of Greece, and they are the philosophers who wrote on science and busied themselves with all the species of science, mock and scorn and ridicule these four nations that I mentioned to you, and they rather proved to refute their entire position as from root to end. The wise men of Persia also recognized and understood that all that science which the Chaldeans, Egyptians, and Canaanites produced is falsehood and a lie. Do not imagine that those refutations are mere assertions and that we, therefore, should not put our trust in them. Rather, they are lucid and correct, faultless proofs to refute the entire position. The only one who could cling to it would be a simple one who believes everything, or one who wishes to deceive others. What does the Rambam think about astrology? As apparently so did the Greeks, Romans, and Persians. What is the view of how are you supposed to view astrology?
BS.
Right? It's garbage. Stupidity. Only a fool would believe that. So then we're like, wait, but didn't the Gemara say, like, seem to be pretty serious about it? So what's going on here? So that's a good question, right? So one answer is, yes. Sayan.
Yeah, so I don't know. To me, the whole thing seems to come together just to say, as a Jew, don't believe in all this because it's not going to work for you. If people believe in it, sometimes you make that happen. Like if somebody says you're going to be a doctor, whatever, you know, it's in your stars, you'll start studying and force yourself in that way. So they're saying with Jews, just believe in God because God is the only truth. And I think that's what they're saying here, is that everything else is not scientific. Although I guess one might, I don't know if people would say religion's not scientific, but to base your future on it is stupid.
Right. So they're saying for sure that this is stupid. And it's not only, in case you don't trust, you know, Rambam, he's quoting a bunch of other, you know, people you probably have heard of, you know, the Greek philosophers, Persian philosophers, who all of them scorn. Again, there are these certain pagan cultures that used to rely on them. They were definitely wrong. And we have also many different mentionings in Chazal about how they're incorrect, such as the fact that why did Paro want all of the babies thrown into the water, because he saw through his astrologers that the savior of the Jews would be done into the water, and that's why he spit them into the river, and that's why he had all babies to be put to death in the river, not realizing that, well, that was referring to for Moshe, that wasn't quite yet, and they misinterpreted the signs, right? And there's a lot of times where we see in Rashi's commentary on Chumash, where he points out that the various figures, non-Jewish figures, were operated an assumption that's based on astrology. And by doing so, they made a mistake and it wound up coming back against them. Okay? So this is all about astrology, right? So astrology throws out the window pretty hard. On the other hand, we have his opinion of astronomy, which again, in terms of time, I won't read it, but basically says that there's a lot of value in astronomy, and it's been taught by people and studied people who really know, and therefore studying that is actually something of very much of merit. Right, that science of the stars is a genuine science and is knowledge of the form of the spheres, the number, the measure, and the course they follow, the revolution, and it's going to be the last line. Over here, it is this calculation of astronomical cycles which the Talmudic sages said that it is wisdom and understanding in the sight of the Gentile peoples. But as for these assertions of the stupid astrologers, they are nothing. For I'm not making clear to you the main points of the matters that are the mystery of the world. If you'd like to see more, again, this translation wasn't my own. This was translated by the late Rabbi Dr. Isidore Kursky. Again, links to the to his book and it can be found in the slideshow. That reminds me, let me forget. I'm going to post a link to the slideshow. Also, if anybody happens to not be getting my emails, feel free to send me your name in the chat, and then I will happily send it to you. Okay, copying the link. Just I want to make sure that way everybody can have it for later. Because it's always helpful to be able to check the sources afterwards if you really liked it and not copy. Okay. Anyways, I'll try again later. Okay. So that's the question of how astronomy works. And the answer is astronomy doesn't quite work that well. Or sorry, astronomy works, astrology doesn't work. That's the Rambam's opinion. So next we have the opinion of the person who always likes to argue with the with the Rambam, namely the Ravid, right? Or Avram Ibn David, right? So this is what he says on Mishnah Torah about Hilchot Tshuva. The question of are you free to, because this is not commenting directly on Rambam's letter, but the question is there such a thing as free will and how does that work? So who'd like to read about whether or not we can escape the Mazalot? This is a very different view than that of the Rambam.
Okay. Right?
Yeah, yes, please.
Okay. From
it is
Hasagot Harabit. Okay, it is common knowledge that from the smallest It's common knowledge that from the smallest to the biggest thing which happens to man, the Creator transmitted to the power of the Mazalot. Only he endowed him with the intelligence to sustain himself and be delivered from the influence of the Mazalot. And this very same is the power endowed to man to be either good or bad.
Okay. So what do we see from the Ravid here, from the Ravad? Well, what appears to be the case? What does, do the constellations of Mazalot have power?
They have power, but you can work against them.
And what allows you to work against them? What particular power?
God endowing us with intelligence.
Right, intelligence and free will, right? The fact that anybody can choose to do A, B, C, or D, the fact that you have a choice is what allows you to escape from Mazalot. So even though he's saying that in theory it could work, but assuming that you actively use your free will, even if you're not Jewish, seemingly, you can escape it. The point is, exercise your free will. Like, why wouldn't you? Assuming you actually try your hardest, you will not be affected and things will work just fine. So now let's briefly summarize. So do constellations have power? So there's two schools of thought, right? So one we just saw, that definitely held by the Persians, sorry, not by the culture, by the Egyptians, the Chaldeans, and the Canaanites said yes, determines your fate, characteristics, and it's inescapable. On the other hand, and also seemingly that appeared to also be, we had a slightly modified version of that, which that was held, that the Gemara seemingly held of, that there are certain inopportune times that may also confer, like, you know, may control your faith, but not absolutely. So that was one side of the argument. On the other hand, we had the Rambam, who says, this stuff's all ridiculous, let's throw it all out. So we had the Gemara that said, yeah, if you do good deeds, right, if you pray, if you listen to God, you can overcome it quite easily. Or there's the Ravid, who says, use your free will, and assuming you know that you're not being a mindless machine, it really won't affect you. Might as well, it might affect, you know, the degree of, let's say, that water, like, you know, rainfall or something like that. But as far as an individual, that has nothing to do with you or I, which also seems to make sense, as we know from modern climatology, that yes, the movement of the stars definitely does, and the moon definitely does affect many things ecologically, but it most certainly does not affect whether or not humans choose to do A or B. Okay, so now I'd like to head into with the question of, so halakha, end of the day, do we actually care, right? Is anything that we do nowadays influenced by the mazalot? So for this, I'd like to point to the month we're about to start quite soon, as well as the month of Av. So there's a phrase called Mishan, the song people are probably familiar with, Mishan Ichlas Adar Marbim Misimcha, as well as Mish Shenichmas Abimata Misimcha, right? Whoever enters the month of Adar should be happy. Whoever's the month of Av should reduce in joy. So the question is, why is that so? So here we have a quotation from the Shulchan Aruch explaining the reasoning for it. Okay, so what does the Shulchan Aruch say? That when one enters the month of Av, we reduce in joy. And a Jewish person that has to him a legal dispute with a Gentile, one should delay from adjuring it because there is bad mazel. So this seems like there is definitely that not only is it a problem, but we are cautious of it, and therefore we try our best to avoid having significant business dealings during the month of Av. So what's up? How is this possible? So one possible resolution is that of the Ritva. The Ritva lived in the 13th century. So again, this is earlier than the Shulchan Aruch. But again, so here's his reasoning for why, despite the fact that we seemingly conclude that there is that mazel doesn't affect the Jews, why it's still relevant at least for these 2 months, right? Why Adar is a happy month, and why Adar is a sad month, which is an inopportune time. So the Ritva says, even though there is no mazel for Israel, this is only for the rest of the year. But in these 2 months, Adar and Av, there is mazel decreed from heaven. It is possible that mazel is just a colloquialism, but alternatively, it is possible that the term mazel just means that God's in control. So based on these two interpretations of the Ritva, of how what we mean by there being mazel for the Jews, we get to two very different conclusions. One of them seems to be that there is a month of the year which you are definitely have to be worried about. On the other hand, there is the fact that, well, just many bad things have happened to Jews in this time period, which would imply that it's a time that you should be cautious of. Because if, regardless of what your actual thoughts on astrology are, these definitely are months where many bad things happen to the Jews, and therefore it appears that maybe for whatever reason God is more readily judging us and punishing us in this time period. So we should try our best to avoid doing things wrong in this time period.
But isn't there another example of two opposite things, that Elul is a good time for tshuva, and Bilam knew the good time once a day to curse the Jews because he could see the time that would come around?
Correct, right? So that is true, right? But also the note is that, let's say in regard to the Bilam caves. So Rashi comments there that God, that on the particular day, or like Bilam's magic was that he could determine the exact moment the God is angry and curse somebody definitively. But God didn't want Bilam to curse the Jews, so he God held himself back to protect the Jews. Could imply that it doesn't fully have an effect. It has a partial effect, and it potentially could if God allows it. But since God doesn't allow it, then therefore it ends up being in the end powerless. And so, and the question is then, oh, El is the time for Tshuva. So then, is that because of the Mazalot, or is that because simply God makes a judgment on Rosh Hashanah, and it's just simply logical that if you're picking a time that's a good time to repent, the time right before you're being judged is an excellent time to try and shape up. So it's not necessarily indicative to that effect. Okay. And so now let's let's summarize. So far as what again? So constellations, what are they? So the answer to that is again, if you want to see to take a look at them again. That was the beginning of the earlier slide where we showed some pictures of what they look like. For fuller examples of this, you feel free to Google around. Also, there's also something called Bright of the Mazala, which discusses it more at length and some of the ways potentially that it can affect. So the question is, how do they work? So in theory, if they do work, what they do is they control your fate. Again, we discussed the various degrees in which they can control your fate, whether it's absolute control, which is what the non-Jews thought, whereas the view seen by in the Gemara as well as elsewhere, that it's a limited control, it's an influence, but it's not absolute. And then we saw the Rambam who threw it all out, and as well as the instances of, let's say, the Rambam saying that your free will can undo it, or of one of the stories in the Gemara, how simply the Jews are completely, again, this only applied for non-Jews that it controls their faith, but not for Jews. And lastly, do we really need to be concerned about, we worried about the constellations of Mazalot? So, conclusion of the day is no, you don't need to be worried about them, but maybe during the month of Av, you should be a little cautious, right? But it's not necessarily due to the fact that, you know, that the model's controlling it. It could be that, why is the month of Av a bad month? It's like, so then since in the month of Av, there has been many bad things that have occurred, such again, destruction of both temples, the exile from Spain. That was when the sin of the spies was, as well as, again, I could give much more, many more lists for more on that. Please see the keynote we say at every Tisha B'Av, right? So there's many bad things that occurred during the month of Av. So as far as, you know, is that done by the constellations? Probably not. But as far as does God seemingly exact more justice from the Jews in that time period, seemingly yes. Okay, so it's one. So next week we're going to be hopefully covering some of the more interesting supernatural beasts in Judaism. For any particular that you're interested in, please let me know, and I will make sure to include them. And then in 2 weeks we'll be concluding with stories of the Leviathan and Behemoth, as well as it pertains to creation, as well as to the end of days. So if anybody has any questions, feel free to ask them now. But that's the end of the formal part of the lecture. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So maybe did you answer this already? I just think it's funny with this whole thing about Mazalot, how we don't do Mazalot, and yet every time something good happens, everybody yells Mazalto. So we don't believe in Mazalot, but is it not that, you know, someone gets married, bar mitzvah, everything is Mazalto, but we don't believe in Mazalot?
Yeah, that is a little, that is very ironic.
I kind of understood.
Yeah, so, correct.
I understood that the Mazal, when you say Mazal Tov and Siman Tov, when you say Mazal Tov and Siman Tov, you're wishing that the occasion will happen under a positive constellation.
Okay, but
isn't that what we're saying?
So that's the question. So a lot of times, so it may have been the original intent, but the question was, it currently mean, right? So is it people, you look nowadays at Mazel Tov, they think it, what is the translation to English of Mazel Tov? It's not good luck. You don't use it like you were. You
congratulations.
To somebody, it's congratulations, right? So is it, you're right, etymologically correct, right? That's what it may have initially meant, but nowadays it simply means it's congratulations. So yes, originally that's probably why. Something good is going to happen. It must have been, you know, divinely ordained. But now it's assuming they're saying congratulations. Because again, not, you know, as we mentioned before, there's a possibility that God controls the Mazalot, that God controls the, if you view the Mazalot as something, an extension of the way God controls the world, then again, then it's not necessarily a problem. The main problem is if you think, view the Mazalot as being something, a separate power, will be the main issue. If you think that it's simply God's way of controlling, which seems to be the Talmudic view of that the Mazalot control, but God controls them, then that, again, that wouldn't be such a big issue. It just, the problem is when you get to the Rambam says that's just, you know, a whole bunch of stupidity and he has other not nice words he uses, but they don't translate well from the from Hebrew or the original Arabic that he used.
There's a current Chabad minhag that if they get home from shul Friday night between 6 and 7 p.m., they don't say Kiddush, and they'll wait. They'll either rush home before 6 if they're able to, or they'll wait till after 7, because that hour it falls into the influence of Mars, and that's inauspicious. So currently, Chabad do not make Kiddush if it falls between 6 and 7 p.m.
So I would say that is an interesting minhag, but I would advise if you are not, that is not your minhag, you definitely should not pick it up. Because personally, that tends to be the best time to have dinner, in my opinion. Well, I guess normally when I have dinner, like the average night is between 6 and 7. So like, that'd be really sad that I'm always eating dinner at a bad time. So that'd be really unfortunate.
But this is saying Kiddush only. It's not a nightly basis. Only Kiddush.
Also Friday night. That tends to be when I end up saying Kiddush Friday night. Also.
Only Friday. Only Friday. Yeah. Because I've been a guest, and you sort of, you missed the deadline, and then you're sort of waiting for 50 minutes while you smell everything wafting from the kitchen.
So I mean, I would just I guess you should only visit them when you know that either when it's like a really short Shabbos or a long Shabbos, so you don't have to worry about it. But
they don't like leftovers. They want you to be hungry when you get the meal. They don't like.
Yeah. So again, that is an interesting practice of Chabad. It just appears that in general, also we tend to not follow said. Again, the exception of the only time that I've seen really being done again is parts of Av and Adar. But again, that has little more basis in terms of historically things having occurred. And it's not necessarily purely based on Mazel. So there's a secondary reason also for those. And also in the story of Purim, where we actually see the exact opposite of the, you know, where the supposed lots of Haman actually get flipped on his head. So he thinks that, oh, it's a good auspicious time and the lots were in my favor. But it turns out that it was the exact opposite of how we interpreted it and saw it. So it's like, so clearly there's something wrong with the very least his view of constellations or the use of thereof. So
can I just say, like, I think it sort of comes down to a more primitive thing that, you know, we were promised to be as many as the stars in the sky and all that. So we look up to the sky. When you look at the sands of the earth, there's just sand. When you look to the sky, these are shining. They're heavenly bodies. So you look, that's why people, mankind, worship the moon and the sun and the stars. So with us, we still say the bracha for the moon. We still count our months to, you know, whatever. So maybe the stars was just sort of like a leftover of it. And when we say mazal tov, or wish people mazal, I think it's that God should bless you with good things in this world. I don't think that we're doing it that your constellation, I don't think that's the meaning behind it.
Today.
And Judaism.
Agreed.
So I think it's okay to say Mazal Tov. I think it's beautiful, like the Mazal from Hashem. And that the word Mazal has come from the Mazalot, but...
Agreed. We don't use it as saying like it was a good stroke of luck from that God gave you. Like God gave you a good fate is how we view it.
Yeah.
So nowadays it's a very different connotation. It's not saying that you think that you're describing that God is the one who gave you this blessing. So it's not bad. It's just interesting that its origin doesn't quite fit with its usage.
Same with Siman Tov.
Right.
Siman Tov is exactly the same as the signs, the horoscopic signs.
Correct. They both, right? Right. But again, if you ask nowadays, anybody thinks Siman Tov, Mazal Tov, they're like, what I meant is that this is good. This happened to you. Nobody's thinking to what the original words mean. So a lot of times, so once the word is that far removed, then the meaning of Mazal Tov is now just means luck. Right? It doesn't mean constellations anymore. So hopefully the
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go for it.
There are many words like that in the English language, where people can be sticklers for their original use. I think the commonest one is decimate. You know, when you say the population was decimated, you really mean it was reduced by 1/10.
Correct.
But nowadays we use it to mean totally destroyed.
Correct. So that etymology is fun, but sometimes you get down the rabbit hole sometimes. So I can give a class on etymology too, but I think we might wind up, people might be a little scared off by it. So, okay. Anybody else have any other questions? If not, I wish everybody a happy month of Adar, and I look forward to seeing everybody next week.
And yeah, Shiko. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.